Hello, and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy. We strive to relate, educate, and innovate, one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. Our podcast explores topics that relationship-based therapists care about. In addition to featuring unique conversations and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hey, how do you stay current with new and emerging trends that impact your ability to practice in a legal and ethical manner? Knowing about ethics is not just something we do in graduate school or something we review to pass a licensure examination. It's a living, breathing code of ethics that adapt and change to coincide with the changes and developments in the profession. And that's what we're going to talk about today, specifically the AAMFT Systemic Ethics Textbook. It's a comprehensive interactive guide on ethics for the MFT profession. And I'm going to be joined by the editor, Dr. Christina Brown. We're going to talk about the latest developments impacting the ethical practice of systemic therapy and specifically the creation of this book, where the contributing who's who of authors capture the latest in practice in the profession, not only in the United States, but worldwide. It's truly an international effort. And 6 months into its release, this book is quickly becoming the premier text for the profession, not just when you're in graduate school, but also for seasoned clinicians to better serve the clients that they see in the practice of systemic therapy. The book has over 30 chapters. It is interactive. It will grow, and it is online only version, which has a lot of pros. And if you're like me, that, I don't know about online. I like old hard copy. We will talk about the advantages of being a virtual text. The book begins with a timeline and decision-making model to assist therapists in navigating ethical situations in their work, making ethical decisions. It also includes introductory materials on the foundations of ethical practice with couples and families and the importance of ethics for MFTs of all ages. The chapters in the textbook cover important issues, including legal aspects of MFT, aspirational ethics, and old standards like informed consent. There's financial arrangements, managing clinical risk, termination, social media, and dual licensure. For many of our listeners out there that are dual licensed, Christina will talk to me about that. It's one of her favorite inclusions in the volume. And then there's also ethical practice with different populations, including LGBTQ, medical family therapy, incorporating religion and spirituality into therapy, military, clients with special needs. And in the world we live in now, how therapists integrate into their practice things as like anti-discrimination and social policy, operating from a socially, culturally attuned lens in your practice, using technology, interacting with the court system. This book has something for everyone. It was a great dialogue with Christina. Let me tell you about her. She is a professor in the couple and family therapy program at Adler University in Chicago. She served as the chair since fall 2015. She's held leadership positions across the field in four states, California, New York, Missouri, before ending up in Illinois. She's been a previous member of the Election Council on the AAMFT, and she's also the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Feminist Family Therapy. I really enjoyed this conversation with Christina, and as you'll hear me say in the interview, I really have enjoyed this book and look forward to using it in my ethics class in the MFT program, which I teach at the University of Louisville. We will be back after the interview. Christina Brown, welcome to the AAMFT podcast. We are here celebrating what I know was a labor of love and many years in the making, the AAMFT Systemic Ethics Textbook, which we have had and will continue to have some of the various authors contribute to this on the podcast in the upcoming weeks and months. But this is a chance first, as we, if you've listened to the show, we always ask about the therapeutic origin story of our guest, our expert, and then for you specifically, what got you interested in ethics and what drew you to this project as the editor of a very large and influential volume that we'll talk about today.
Great. So thank you so much for having me. Let's see, my therapeutic origin story. It's interesting, you know, I graduated from the University of Colorado Boulder with my bachelor's degree in, 94. Yep, 94. And I had fallen in love with this idea of working clinically with people, but I also loved books. My degree was in literature, and I had a professor who wanted to be him when I grew up. He had this mix of being an academic and a clinician. And so at first I thought I wanted to do literature first and then follow a clinical degree, but I found myself really wanting the clinical perspective. And as I explored different opportunities, I know this is totally cliche, but I've always loved love. Like, I find relationships to be at the core of who I am and how I see life. And the more I learned about systemic training and being actually was an MFCC way back then in California, a marriage, family, child counselor, I decided to pursue the master's at the University of San Diego. And so I was delighted to get in there and had a wonderful time learning from Joan Patterson and Todd Edwards and Lee Williams, and actually some fantastic faculty who ended up being authors in the textbook as well. So that was really an honor for me to work with them again in that circular space. Let's see. And then I had both my kids while I was in my master's program. And then I decided, after doing some clinical work for a few years, I decided to pursue a PhD because I felt like my place was in academia. And I was lucky to receive my PhD at Syracuse University in New York and loved my time there as well. And knew academia was it for me. So I put myself on the market when I was heading towards my PhD. And it was pretty important for me to find a job because my kids were at a pivotal point of changing them to a new school. And so I was interviewed at a school called Forest Institute, the School of Professional Psychology at Forest Institute in Springfield, Missouri. And they were actually specifically looking for an AAMFT, like systemic person to teach ethics. They had gone through their accreditation process, and some of their feedback had been that a lot of their classmates were crossovers and with the psychology department. And the feedback was, hey, you need an MFT to teach your ethics course. And so I felt like that was my first calling to get connected to ethics and get involved in that. So I taught ethics my very first semester as an academic and have enjoyed it ever since.
You've been in great places and worked with great people, and your organic pathway of coming full circle now to take on this project, again, years in the making that we'll talk about today. So what do you think, beyond learning about systemic ethics in your MFT training program, why do you think it's important to stay up to date with ethics at ethical codes after graduate school? Because a lot of people listen to this podcast, they are therapists in training. But so many more of us, the ethics is not just something you learn in graduate school. It's a living, breathing document as you evolve as a systemic therapist and MFT. So why is that so important?
Yeah, that's so accurate. For years, I've always told my students that when we graduate from our programs and become licensed, there's like a curve as to who is the most ethical in the field. And I always joke that it's recent graduates because you're steeped in that ethics learning. And then it's also then clinicians who are coming to the end of their career because they don't want to do anything wrong. And so I joke that this is this curve. And in that story, I tell my students how important it is to always stay up to date on what the ethical code is, not only by AAMFT, but the state in which you're in, and how important it is to continually familiarize yourself with any changes that are occurring, because that's your responsibility. Not knowing is not an excuse. And I think that ethics, and in my opinion, especially confidentiality, are at the foundation of what we do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I had a pleasure over a decade ago of serving on the national board of AMFT, and that was right around the time the AMFT code of ethics was revised. And I remember learning so much about ethical codes. It's not just after a certain amount of years an ethical code is revised. It's when the professional societal context deemed that. So what emerging ethical concerns and content areas that we, if we were conducting this interview a decade ago, like what I said when I was on the board, we probably wouldn't have had to consider, because there are so much more emerging things, certainly in a post-COVID world. But what are these new ethical concerns that everybody practicing, even if you've been out of graduate school for a while, you need to be aware of?
Yeah. Of course, the immediate thing that comes to mind is teletherapy, telesupervision. And we were developing and creating this textbook throughout COVID. COVID was probably, as with everybody, a reason it definitely was a slowdown. But as well as everything was evolving at that time. So some of the truths and requirements around cross-state work or talking on the phone with supervisees, that all changed coming in and out of COVID. And so that was really a big part of focusing. So even, for example, our documentations chapter had to specifically focus on a virtual therapist and a virtual therapist's needs, as well as the traditional on-ground therapist that I was trained to be. And that also aligned with COAMFD, having requirements from our accredited programs about specific attention to learning about teletherapy. And so I would say, definitely say teletherapy was the number one that came through. And then I think really the second biggest important thing for me as I focused on developing the textbook was social justice. I was trained as a socially responsible practitioner, and that's always been part of who I am. And I've had the privilege of being at Adler University. Now this is my 10th year as the chair of the couple and family therapy department there. And social justice is really at the core of what we do and who we are. And so it was really important to include that not only in chapters like navigating client-generated prejudice by some of our esteemed colleagues, Deanna Harris-McCoy, Racine Henry, and Tamir Strachan, but also having that included throughout the document in terms of the choices we made about representation and language. And so that was something that I really wanted to encourage our authors and support them throughout the process.
As I was mentioning, this is a very large endeavor and a long process, years in the making. Tell us about the creation and the editing process of the AMFT Systemic Ethics Textbooks.
Oh, wow. That's definitely a big story. So Stephanie Frank, who was our former AMFT associate counsel, had posted—
And former guest on the show. She was a great guest.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I actually have my ethics students listen to her podcast every year still, because she's a great woman. And this was really her baby and her idea. And she had posted in the member services that she was looking for an editor. And I hadn't really done editing yet in any formal capacity, but I had always felt like, okay, I know I'm a good writer, but I'm a better editor. And so I felt this is might be something that I wanted to try out. And I was contemplating it. And then a colleague, Dr. Marina Bluefstein at Adler University, forwarded it to me and said, you should do this. Oh, I thought, okay, so someone else is thinking along the same signs as I am seeing. And I submitted my proposal and my material and had the opportunity to be interviewed by Stephanie, and just really enjoyed the opportunity to work with her. And we came together to develop it. Her baby was the interactive virtual part of it. And I was tasked with the content, leaning into both of our sort of passions and our expertise. And so when I was thinking about what I wanted to include in the textbook, I've always taught ethics with a creative perspective. I feel like therapeutically, when I feel like I'm getting stuck, that I always go creative. And in terms of teaching ethics, which let's admit can be dry and boring sometimes, I thought it needs to be engaging. It needs to be creative. And you're typically also getting students at the very start of their career. So they're not seeing clients, which ethically, of course, they shouldn't. but how do they know how to apply the learning? And so that's really what drew me to that interactive digital perspective, as well as what you said earlier, that it's a living, breathing document. So this is something that's going to need to be edited. And the ease of doing that sort of in the virtual realm was appealing as well.
Since I also teach ethics, so I'll be using this for the first time in January of 2025 with my MFT students. And AMFT has needed this for a long time. There had been, those of you out there, either students or educators or trainers, you may remember AMFT had these very minimal, small paperback books. And this is anything but that. You're right. In its pure form, people think ethics, oh, that's not a class I'm interested in taking, but how to make it come alive, we'll talk about later. But since we're talking about the format of the book, first, tell me how you have a who's of authors in here. Many of them have been guests on our show over the last 6 years. And it's, you know, an honor to be asked to write a chapter like this. But part of the editor's job is going out and not only putting together the content, but finding the people to write the content. So let's talk about how you went out and assembled this great pool of talent, and then the structure of the book as well.
Yeah. First thing, I'm a researcher at heart. So first thing I did when I received the opportunity to do this was I reached out to colleagues who have been editors of large textbooks themselves and immediately introduced myself if I didn't know them and said I would love to bend your ear a little bit and get some advice as I am stepping into this endeavor. And I just had an opportunity, of course, also to talk with some of the greats then. And then at the same time, I was really taking a look at who is already out there writing about ethics. Who are the people who have been part of the ethics committee of AMFT, the people who are writing articles and doing research on ethics? And that was really where I started. And then I also made a commitment both with Stephanie and to myself that the author list would be representative, not only of as many schools and formats of schools, so both virtual and online schools, because of course, when we were first recruiting, this was pre-COVID, but I wanted to make sure that those online programs had a voice and were represented as well. And also, I wanted the authorship to be diverse. Let's face it, a lot of the writings we've had historically in our field are white men. And I wanted to get voices from women, from people of different identities, different races, different representation. And I wanted it to be something that our students would look to and could see themselves in the authors and connect to what was being written. And so that was really important to me to reach out. And so I started, of course, first with who's been writing about ethics. And then I started being really thoughtful about what are the other things that people are writing? Because everything we do is connected. Everything comes back to ethics. And I've noticed that over the years, my students, as they start learning more about ethics, they become more interested in very specific things. So I remember the first time I taught ethics, I think every week after class, I would call the hotline. So I had questions because my students just came up with fascinating curiosities. And so I thought there's so much more to understanding ethics than informed consent and privilege and confidentiality. There's so much more to it. And so I wanted it to really be an expansive representation of what people were actually doing in the field.
Yeah, I love it. Let's talk about the different content areas in the book and then how just the book in e-format only, which again, I think is maybe for some of our more traditional or older listeners will they still like a hard copy of a book, but I think this e-version that you talk about that Stephanie was passionate about has a lot of benefits too. So talk about the format and the actual different content areas that will be covered.
Yeah. So I will definitely admit to having to come and reconcile the idea of doing a virtual textbook. I'm one of those old school professors who, like, when I get my desk copy, I want the actual copy so I can flag the pages, write all over it. I've been known to even tell different publishers that if they don't send me the hard copy, I won't use their book because, of course, now they all want to send virtual copies. So I really had to wrap my head around being in the place of promoting and supporting a virtual textbook.
You're not alone. I feel the same way. Yep.
And I felt the way I did that was to talk to my current students, not only to talk to them, but also watch them in classes. They are accessing everything online. They've got it on their laptops, on their tablets, on their phones. I've had to say, okay, they're not texting on their phone or shopping on Amazon. They're actually looking at the textbook because they've got it on their screen. And so that was a big part of connecting it to it, that as a sort of old school MFT, I needed to get in touch with the way that people were working and operating now. And so it's been a really great learning process for me in terms of that. Even just the interactiveness, not just like some of the videos we were able to include, but the fact that I can click on things and go back and forth. And so that's really been eye-opening really for me and learning a lot. And so I really had to connect with that. And I will still say one of the things I'm looking forward to the most is this sort of next process is reaching out to those of us who are actually using the textbook and creating some sort of instructor's guide or a compendium to go along with it. And so that's something that's a sort of passion project of mine moving forward, because knowing that I'm someone who actually has to use it in the classroom, I want to be able to support faculty to do that. And a lot of people have reached out and I'm like, I don't quite know yet. We're all piloting it this year. And so I'm looking forward to that feedback from everybody.
Yeah, that's the living, breathing part of it. And certainly that I would fall into that category too.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the different chapters. Give us an overview.
Yeah. So I just wanted to add, I think that part is also representative of who we are as a systemic field. Like, I did not do this alone. I'm not going to continue to do this alone. This is about how it actually works in the classrooms, how students are actually learning, what they're not learning, and we need to edit. And, you know, that I think, again, contributes to that idea of a living, breathing document. So the format, it got big fast. And part of it was that we had so many people who were so excited to be writing about different areas, not only the traditional aspects of professional, legal, and ethical issues that we've all been learning for years in the classroom and teaching in the classroom, but also the specifics that we have each dove into in our careers, whether it's specific to military or specific to working in the media, especially, or advertising, clients with disabilities, that range of different ethical concerns that come up above and beyond the foundational knowledge that we all should have. And that's where it got really exciting, is I would reach out to people and talk to them and they're like, oh, this is a passion project of mine, or could I write about this? And so it really just started growing. And I felt, because it was a virtual textbook, I did not feel hemmed in by page numbers or size. And I felt like I could really let the field and the authors and the people who are doing the work lead the road to what this would look like. I also thought about what are some of the things that I feel like has been missing from different textbooks. For example, like the ethics and the financial arrangements, or that by Barry Hill Downs and Good Case, or Jeff Bryson's chapter on ethics in the court system. Those were things that sort of get touched on in those early ethics classes at the beginning of our programs, but students are always asking questions about money and becoming an expert in court and things like that. And so I was like, let's make this the answer to everybody's questions.
I have the table of contents in front of me right now. What, in addition to these new things spurned by a post-COVID world, telehealth and everything else, I know these are all like children of yours and you don't want to pick a favorite chapter, but tell us what you're really excited about in this volume.
You know, I remember reading it for the first time in order. Like, I've been reading chapters in and out as they came in and learning things, but also really loved the process of sending feedback and asking questions of the authors and us answering those through the text. And I remember reading it for the first time and I was like, this is really good. Not only is this really good, but we have an amazing field, just feeling this sort of enormous sense of pride. And then I felt like we were also challenging the sort of the bubble in which we existed by including, for example, chapters on being ethical internationally, or looking specifically to being ethical in Canada and having Sharon really write about what it's like to be a clinician from a Canadian perspective. But I think probably one of the chapters I'm the most proud of, not necessarily because the content is different or better, because they're all excellent, but as an academic, I've really been raised in programs that are couched within other disciplines or aligned with other disciplines. Both of my academic positions have been in formerly schools of professional psychology, where I have psychology students, counseling students. At Adler, we also have an art therapy program. And so I'm not unfamiliar with people who opt dual licensure. And so that was like one of the first chapters I was like, we need to have this voice here. And so actually, Ruth and Stephen Ulmer are two of my former students who did the MFT master's en route to this idea at Forest Institute. So I definitely reached out to them, and I've had then also the privilege of getting to know Linda Oxford and Mike Bishop, and really wanted to hear their perspectives about how they bring together their professional and systemic identities with the other disciplines that they're part of, because I know that's something that a lot of clinicians struggle with in terms of deciding which, or struggle with how do I marry both of these together. And so that I thought was pretty trailblazing.
Yeah, as I was telling you, as before, as someone that teaches in an accredited co-empty program housed within the School of Social Work, where my students have a dual identity as both social workers and MFTs, I was so excited about that chapter. And I don't know the husband and wife team, but I know Linda Oxford very well and Mike Bishop, and have so much respect for both of them. Linda is certainly someone who has also been very influential in AMFT leadership and somebody that is a great model for a dual identity. And I have read that chapter, and it captures, I think, so nicely. And yeah, that is a great addition for even our readers out there that are working in settings where there are multiple different professional orientations and licensures. Not only is this kind of momentous undertaking, I always think ethics for MFTs, because of the relational nature. I mean, it by far, I know I am preaching to the choir with our audience, but doing couple and family work is so interesting, but it's also more complicated because of the many things going on in the room. So if the work is more complicated, so are the ethics. So it almost needs to be in a volume. I would always think that these previous versions that AMFT had come up with, again, I just go back to the having a visual of the size, almost like a little mini book. And that would really could not speak to the depth and breadth that is included in this volume. So what of all the stuff in all your years of experience, you and I have been in the field about the same amount of time, what did you actually learn after editing the book that has informed both your practice and your teaching?
Gosh, I don't even know if I could point to one thing.
Well, multiple things, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably the thing that I take away is starting at the beginning of the book, we should really have that foundational information that you would really see in any sort of ethics textbook. And then it expands or blossoms into these other specific topics. And I really was reminded, was taught that having that core foundation, that framework, was a place I could always rely on going back to when new issues or concerns came up. And that was a place that was like my ethical home, that I could sit there and use that knowledge and that experience to apply to any new situations that came up. And I think that was really a learning moment, a reminder moment. I remember learning about that. So my ethics professor in my master's program was Richard Leslie, who was a lawyer. So he definitely scared us all. That's an important part of it, is being in awe of the importance of ethics in the work that we do. And I think that was really that reminder that to use that foundational knowledge to steer you through anything that comes up. I would also say that we never practice alone. So like, that's a really core value of mine, that even when you're the lone therapist in the room, you're still not practicing alone. You've got supervisors, peer supervisors, colleagues, you've got AMFT to back you up. Like I said earlier, I called them all the time my first semester teaching ethics. And I tell my students, like, this is your resource. Go to them and ask questions. They're there for you.
I have one foot in academia, another foot in these communities of therapists practicing. And I think another application, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I haven't been in graduate school in a long time, but whether you're in a peer consultation group or a book club, this would be a great thing to share in a group like that, to talk, stay up to date. You had mentioned earlier too about teaching ethics, and I'm curious, obviously you're those of us who listen to the podcast that are supervisors or educator, now you have a up-to-date volume of which to refer to. But one of the ways I would always teach this is just go to what the students are interested in their actual cases and then unfold the ethics from there. But you've been doing this a long time. I'm wondering if you can share with our listeners some of your tools or tricks or what you have found after getting feedback from your students to be especially impactful as far as facilitating a dialogue or teaching ethics in a creative way.
Great question. So I will definitely own right now, I have taken a break from teaching ethics for the last couple of years. So I'm looking forward to using the text myself, but I definitely wanted to name that I've taken a break for a couple of years just because of being steeped in ethics. But I will say that the legacy of the courses I've created has always been, again, that creative piece. And there are three assignments I always loved in my ethics class, and I think they've held true for the 20 plus years that I've been teaching ethics. And the first is a creative application. And so I task my students to bring in a 15, 20 minute clip from popular media, from movies. And of course, that's abundantly available now. And present us with a client or a case or a situation, and then apply the topics that are learning there today. So the students are required to bring in like three or four discussion questions based on the readings. And we're then applying that learning to real, quote unquote, sort of real cases, because we've got those clips that we're watching together as a shared group. And so that's always been fun, not only for that, but also I've learned about some really great movies and great shows along the years. Because I don't know them all. And so students have definitely introduced me to some great things. And then my second favorite, this is actually a midterm that I do, is there's a movie called Mumford. And it's basically like the most unethical therapist that you could see. I should probably get more specific information on the movie, but my students are required to watch that and then write a letter of complaint to AMFT using AMFT's format and of sending in a complaint, basing it on the actual ethical code and what the concerns are. And so again, that application piece is so important to me. And then I always believe, I said earlier, I have that background in literature, so I love reading. I've always loved reading. And I have my students read a book called Privileged, or I should say it's a novel, Privileged Information by Stephen White. And it's a murder mystery from a perspective of a therapist. He's not an MFT. Those can sometimes be more difficult to find because we are dominated often by other fields like counseling and that kind of thing. But anyways, I have them read the book, and we do, depending on the cohort, depending on the years, different creative activities around that book. And so again, those are that opportunities to get people excited about ethics and bringing them in through sort of these other avenues of creativity that I think speaks to them in different ways. So those are three of my favorite ways to teach ethics.
Oh yeah, those are a triumvirate of great ideas, and I love them all. I was thinking, as you were saying that, talking about kind of pop culture and their portrayal of psychotherapists in general, especially systemic therapists or couple and family therapists. My students and I were talking about Ted Lasso, which captured the pop culture in many ways. And it in some ways, the most genuine portrayal between Ted and his therapist, beautiful around a therapeutic alliance. And then my students said they were crushed in the second or third season where they find out Ted's now ex-wife has started dating the former couple's therapist. So it was such a beautiful portrayal. And then the whole series jumped the shark for me after I saw that, because how could they get it so right in one area and mess it up so bad in another? So I think we picked that up too, where these, not only were there's ethical breaches.
And I think Hollywood likes to emphasize those more than the ethical good we do. And so I think I just leaned in to take an opportunity to learn from that. What are they doing wrong? What could you have done different in the same situation? And how would you handle it if you were the clinician or if you found out about a colleague engaging in something like this?
Beautiful. Yeah, you're reading my mind. That's exactly how I would handle it. This has been really great to talk to you. Oh, I had one other thought, and I have never done this, but I am going to put it into the syllabus this year. For the last 8 years, AMFT has had the student ethics competition.
Yes.
Have you ever used that in your training?
We've had students who've applied, and actually years ago, I had some of my PhD students, I think, place. I can't remember what the place was. It's been years. But the moment you said that, I was like, that's a brilliant idea.
Yes.
So I'm going to steal that. And I think it's a great
neither
idea.
Neither one of us have done it. So that will, next time you teach it, it's going to encourage me to do it. And now, as we're doing this, I'm just looking on the website. They do it in the spring of every year, and it's done in team format. So perhaps with your supervision group, perhaps with members of your graduate cohort. And now they open it, because this show is more about therapist in training, they open it up to clinical fellows. So if you're postgraduate, so one of these, as I was mentioning earlier, peer consultation groups or a group of your friends to stay involved. So I think it's a great program that even I, very versed at AMFT as you are, have not participated in yet, but this conversation is going to spur me on to do that. And people will always, either kind of students, practitioners, or certainly educators, will probably want to continue the dialogue. And like you gave this great idea of not fully fleshed out yet, this living, breathing document that is the MFT Systemic Therapy Ethics Textbook. If people want to continue the dialogue with you, Christina, tell them the best way to do that.
So I can be reached by email at kbrown, K-B-R-O-W-N, at adler.edu. I love to connect with my fellow systemic thinkers, my fellow clinicians, and of course, anybody who wants to engage in a topic of curiosity around ethics. And I'm also looking forward to working with people to develop the teaching compendium. I think, Eli, I'm going to have you write the one on the ethics competition and share that great idea with everyone. But yeah, please always reach out, connect with me. I love having relationships with everybody in our field.
Eli, back with you, bringing to a close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast, you know, reflecting on that conversation with Christina. Some final thoughts. I think the best therapists pursue continuing education on multiple domains they're interested in, and especially ethics. And doing so helps you keep abreast of the evolving standards of care in our profession, increases your value of your professional services, keeps your career fresh, interesting, and satisfying, and again, allows you to practice in an ethical and legal way. And remember, many of you listening to this are members in the AMFT, but membership has its privileges. And I've always talked about on the show, one of the components of an AMFT membership that I always value. I liken it to AAA. I always pay for my AAA. And sometimes I'm like, is this really worth it? But when I need it, it is extremely valuable. So I'm talking about the AAMFT legal and ethical consultation. All members of AMFT are eligible to receive ethical advisory opinions, and clinical fellows, professional members are also able to receive legal consultations. AMFT's legal and ethics staff can be contacted ethics@aamft.org or area code 703-253-0459. In addition to picking up the ethics textbook, I would like to remind you of something Christine and I talked a lot about, which is the ethics competition. And as we are here in the close of 2024, in the last couple months, usually AMFT opens this up in the spring of 2025. Registration is usually from the end of February until the beginning of April. And then there is about a month and a half to work together as a team. So the competition is designed to encourage MFTs to foster an interest in ethical issues and enhance their ability to analyze and respond to various ethical dilemmas that they will undoubtedly encounter throughout their career in systemic therapy. And in the competition, participants will submit an essay analyzing and responding to one of these hypothetical scenarios. So I was saying in the podcast that it used to be this was just for students, and many master's students, PhD students work on this, but now professional members, including clinical fellows, can enroll in the competition
if they are the only professional member in a team and the professional member is not the team leader. And each team must consist of a minimum of two and a maximum of three individuals. Essays are limited to 5 pages, double-spaced, 12-point font, and further instructions are available around the time of submission. Essays are reviewed and scored by judges, and the judges are members of the AMFT Ethics Committee. Last year, the awards are first, second, and third place team. Each member of the first place team received a cash award. In addition, each member of the first place team will be invited to attend the AMFT Leadership Symposium, which is always in the spring of the year. Winners are usually announced in June. Something to look forward to. Did you know that AMFT is active on all your favorite social media channels? Be sure to follow us, the AMFT, on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the world of AMFT, you can always find the back installments of the podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. I am partial to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but it's on Google Play, Stitcher. So please, if you're new to us, check out back installments where we tackle the latest trends and events impacting the world of systemic therapy like today. And I have a number of pioneer interviews, which is some of my favorite interviews to conduct over the years. You can drop me a line at elikaram.com, where you see everything going on in my world, including I have 2 books that are out. One for our young professionals, Marriage and Family Therapy, a National Exam, Your Guide for Success. That's from Springer. And that will prepare you for the national exam, including 360 practice questions, a full-length mock exam, proven strategies and tips for test taking, and it's organized to match the domains of the licensure exam. And then, if you're interested in these common factors that we always talk about on the show, including what makes a motivated client, how you build, nurture, and repair a therapeutic alliance, how you maximize your own therapist factors, you want to check out my book, Bringing Common Factors to Life in Couple and Family Therapy, from Rutledge. As always, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay systemic.